Okay, so we're going to jump straight into the open mic. Just one small piece of information. I was talking earlier about the five-word international poetry competition run by O'Bale. Now, if you would like to enter, just go to the O'Bale website, obale.ie. There's an entry form, and you'll also go through your submission criteria. Okay? Okay, we're just going to jump straight to the open mic. We have 11 people so far. If you're not on the list and you want to be, just, you know, I'll go around and try and grab my attention. So, our first performer is Matthew Moynihan.
This poem is called The Salt of the Earth, and it's been published on Friday in the newest Stanzas chapbook. She bled out like a monologue in the hole that galled her, a final resting place for a truly restless heart. When she met him, she couldn't have known that it was not only the hatchet that he wanted to bury. There was more to it. Lust, rage, love unrequited that cut him like an axe. The leaves echoed with a crunch as they took a country stroll through the moonborn woods. The trees whispered as the sun closed its curtains, "Where are you taking her?" After the birds had flown away, after the earth had swallowed her whole, and the shovels of wet clay buried her deep, we were left with the poignant question, why?
Thank you, Matthew. Could we get Joe Healy, please?
It's a new poem, and it's my first time reading it. I'm going to try it out in O'Bale. What better place? It's last week we were in Limerick in Dense City, and we did a little course there. About, not just spoken word, but about dance, about touch, about hearing. And this poem came out of it called Rolling on the Ground. I may go on the ground to do this, to finish it off, but you might not hear me, or I might not be able to read it, so. But I think I'll stay on my feet. Rolling on the Ground. Dear listener or reader, what a lovely thing to do, rolling on the ground, like cats and dogs, horses too. Animals love to kick their legs up in the air, and children too. Why don't you? With caution, dear listener, do not roll on the ground if you are a pilot coming into land, a bus driver by a big ravine, a farmer spreading slurry in his land. You get my drift? A lion tamer practicing his scene, for then the lions might eat you up. You may get away with rolling on the ground when you are at a rock concert in the modern rain, or playing with your children on a sunny day. Why, you could take them up a big hill and roll down in the grass, just like when you were a child, or in the quiet of your bedroom, with or without your lover. You may be a professional soccer player. They roll on the ground all the time. Or you may be on a beach where nobody is looking. Roll on the sand. Feel the wave. Use your imagination. Now, dear reader, I am going to roll on the ground. Like the performance artist who inspired me, I'm going to roll where writers and readers and listeners have walked on this floor, leaving their footprints and ghosts in this town, leaving me to roll them down. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Joe. Next we have Charles Clark.
Okay to read other people's poems, but It's always okay. It's always okay.
Precisely what we're going to do. Hunting song. Palgrave's stone and treasury. Waken lords and ladies gay, on the mountain dawns the day. All the jolly chase is here with hawk and horse and hunting spear. Hounds are in their couples yelling, hawks are whistling, horns are knelling. Merrily, merrily mingle they, waken lords and ladies gay. Waken lords and ladies gay, the mist has left the mountain grey. Springlets in the dawn are screaming, diamonds on the break are gleaming. And foresters having busy been, to track the buck and pick it green. Now we come to chant our lady, waken lords and ladies gay. Waken lords and ladies gay, to the greenwood haste away. We can show you where he lies, fleet of foot and tall of size. We can show the marks he made, where against the oaks his antlers sprayed. You shall see him brought to bay, waken lords and ladies gay. Louder and louder chant the lay, waken lords and ladies gay. Tell them youth and mirth and thee run a course as well as we. Time, stern huntsman, who can balk, staunch as hound and fleet as hawk. Think of this and rise with day, gentle lords and ladies gay. Sir Walter Scott, the great and good Sir Walter Scott, as he has sometimes been called.
Thank you very much, Charles. Next we have Ray Hanrahan.
Nice. This is from many years back, in my protest days. We were doing a recce for a protest at Shannon, and this poem came out of it. It's called Operation Airplay. Operation Airplay. We intend to steal in unannounced in a borrowed car in the hopes of confusing the Gardaí. Sightseeing we are, searching for crash barriers, checkpoints, choke points. Looking for a place to make our stand. We'll pay attention to the temporary landscape while not drawing attention to ourselves. We want to get in under the radar.
Thank you, Ray. Next we have Patricia Walsh.
Titus poem is called A Proper Job, and it's maybe a rather Christian level that make say, well, you find a proper job, and I said, okay, right. So it's called A Proper Job. The capital fingers holds my hand, staunching suicide from my swollen wrist. It's not satisfaction in dying, but the hereafter upsets matters. Oral drinks have a lot to answer for, not allowed to touch the cufflinks supreme. Blowing smoke on regular intervals, cutting insults into the river of spite. Procrastinating finality, always going out to see the scene wrecked for itself. Some burning reality never passes muster. Retribution while walking on the keys. An emergency call stalls the rot. Suffer while socializing, that's all that. Producing witnesses for the situation even worse than letting it slide, cheerful recollections. Kissing a mutual enemy, it broadcasts on the noise to make me pay for a deed not undone. Barren imagination never lets know what happened unless it explodes the mental collection. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Patricia. Next, we have tonight's five-word poetry challenge winner, Colin Holden.
Hey guys, how are you doing? I'm doing like, this one's a little bit longer. It's a little short, it's called Loaves. Mrs. McLaughlin sat in the back of the taxi on the way home from the crematorium, her stockinged legs dangling over the dust the cab's floor. and her rheumatic hands gingerly wrapped around the urn. He had been a difficult man, she thought. The last 30 years had been the most painful. He'd grown worse in old age, as hard as peach stones and as bitter as the pips. It had been a quiet ceremony. The neighbours had come and said a few comforting words, but no one was going to miss him. He'd been a nasty person, in truth. She remembered him asleep in front of the television with the sound maxed out, drunk on their 3-night honeymoon in the north, masturbating in the marital bed, at their son's funeral. A crumpled suit, his only nod to grief. Faggot, they'd called him, and worse too. No surprise, he'd said. He had it coming. Only right, he should do it himself. She sighed as the taxi pulled up outside the yard. It had covered in tarmac at him when they moved in. Pointless having a garden, he said. Only takes up your time. The cab driver took the fare, helped her out of her seat, and brought her to the door on his arm. He was a nice young man, she thought. Brazilian, maybe. From somewhere South American, anyway. He wouldn't have liked that much at all. She creeped through the hall and saw his chair in the living room as she passed by the door. The ashtray was still there, full as ever. She'd have to do something about the smell. She walked into the kitchen, put the urn down on the counter and hung her coat by the door. Then she went back into the sitting room, took the ashtray and the half-empty carton of major from the side table and carried them back into the kitchen, where she tipped them both into the bin. Tired but clear-headed, Mrs. McLaughlin set out a large Pyrex bowl and a paper bag of wholemeal and started baking. She mixed and measured and poured and beat. Making her own bread had always been a point of pride for her, its own reward and a small sanctuary in what had been, she considered, a hard life. It was good to be surrounded by the familiarity of the ritual. It took the gears off and it helped with her hands. She had baked for anyone who would take a loaf, for church coffee mornings with the neighbours too. They'd given her a KitchenAid automatic to take care of the kneading, which had become difficult by then. Cold mornings were the worst. Her knuckles swelled like wasp stings until she barely closed her fingers around the shaft of a wooden spoon. The mixture ready. She poured it into the bowl of the machine. From a dreamlike distance, she watched as her own veiny fingers reached for the urn on the counter and screwed the lid and tapped some of the ashes out into the dough. There was more of them than she had expected. Funny, he never seemed to be that much of a man in life. She weighed the remainder on her scales, jotting down the 5 pounds she read off the display. Then she set the mixer, flicked on the power, and watched, dazed, as the spiraling arm of the dough hook dropped into the aluminium basin and spun hypnotically. A few minutes later, she set the dough aside to rise, made herself a cup of coffee, and went into the sitting room, where she watched the television at a reasonable volume. The next day, Agnes McLaughlin woke early, dressed and had breakfast. She sat in the kitchen with a calculator and wrote out a few figures. After that, she picked up the phone and dialed Gettigan's supermarket. She added 16 kilos of wholemeal flour, 3 pounds of butter and 1 kilogram of salt to her weekly grocery delivery. Then she packed a light lunch and 2 loaves of bread and caught the number 6 into town. She walked to the park and sat on a bench by the reservoir, feet swinging idly an inch or so above the ground. It was a quiet morning, but not too cold. There was someone fishing, she could see, and a few joggers and dog walkers were going about their routines. She broke up the 2 loaves of bread in her shopping bag. She fed them to the ducks. He hated when she'd fed the ducks. He called it wasted time. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Connor. Next, we have Ashley Audio.
Still nervous. This poem is, everybody knows Cuchulain, so the name of this poem is called Sentente is Fool. He's in an empty parking lot, on a corner, at a street stop. He's under the bridge. He's laying under the customs building. He's been sleeping for centuries. And now he has awoken. You see his face and turn away. You know his presence because your childhood creeps upon you out of nowhere. There are vast lands on these city streets, but too much sorrow and play is swallowing the ancient meanings. Shields and swords sit behind glass, and the stone goddesses are in the basement screaming. But no one is there to listen. The harpist is buried separate from her golden strings, and flags of gold are waving with foreign symbols. Yet the hunger has awoken. The longing and young love is replaced by rage that has no meaning. Sleeping gods are moving in their slumber, and Sententa knows this. He knows his death came too early for you now. He knows that the raven on his shoulder was telling him things that are now needed. Questions without answers are on the lips of everyone. Answers are painful, so it's time to tell a new story. It's time to resurrect the myth. Would you like me to tell you about once upon a time in a land far, far away? But first, let us repave the roads. Let us rip up the old cobblestones and see the flowers and creatures living below. Let us love the new darkness, even when it tastes like dead history. Let us stand at the graves of men who knew more truth than their lives. Let us look into the eyes of each other deeply and see there is no fear. The warrior is not asleep. Finn is awake, and Sententa is alive. He is here now. His rage is the stag in the forest, calling to its tribe. His sadness is the lone bird singing in the night. His passion is the cool air of autumn caressing your cheeks. His love is the rising sun, and your soul's awakening. You are ready. You have been ready for a long time. It's just you were distracted, and you would not listen to the old tale. So let us begin. Once upon a time, in Ireland, in a world very near, lived a people, lived a man, lived a woman, and a child. And this is their story.
Thank you very much, Ashley. Okay, so next we have Dan. Yourself?
Thanks. This is a translation I did from Sean Reardon. It's called The Cat. His most famous poem was called Turnbull, or else.
Sorry. What? Oh. Sorry.
Turnbull, or exchange. And this is very similar, it's called the cat. To leave an animal outside in the blind night, cat. And the sky too high for a house, I would not do that. Two eyes like cigarettes, sharper than a pike's. Terror in its little heart, I would not do the likes. Combed whiskers shaking and fighting nails like hooks. The trust of a kitten, its ruin, I would not do the likes. I looked into the cat's mind and the cat scrutinized. The thoughts coming into my eyes. We both realized I was made a half cat. The cat became half man, and to smash that intimacy, I wouldn't. It would be a sin to lock eyes with the cat. I would see no hatred stirring, better clutch her arching spine and feed the burden. Sean Reid.
Thank you very much, Daw. Sorry for saying your name wrong. It looked like Dan, but it's actually Daw. Thank you very much. Next we have Benjamin Burns.
My opinion is a rusty signpost leaning into a hedge with ivy growing up it, surrounded by ferns. My opinion is cold toast without butter or margarine or soya spread or jam or anything. My opinion is a graveyard for ideas, decomposing over thousands of years into idea soil that feeds idea worms that in turn feed idea birds that shit explosives indiscriminately. My opinion is an airport full of starlings. My opinion is compassion for all beings. My opinion is an onion, the taste, the tears. My opinion screams like a feuding cat and howls like a fox in the night. My opinion is the banshee, a rabbit, a hat, a kite. My opinion is very serious. My opinion is death and life. If you think my opinion cannot really be any or all of these things, then we have a difference of opinion. My opinion is either not your opinion, or it is your opinion, or it's neither, or it's both. My opinion is a field, pink with ragged robin, drifting off and up to meet the sky. My opinion is two sides in a Twitter feud, a third party throwing petrol on the fire, and fourth party casual observer. My opinion is war and the suffering it causes. My opinion sings in the shower. My opinion is for and against and chair and audience with its diversity of opinions. My opinion seeks to no platform itself. The reason my opinion disagrees with my opinion is because I'm a hypocrite who's always right, even when he's wrong. My opinion is a tinkling stream until it isn't. My opinion takes up old opinions and sees them in a new light that's always been there, if there is a there that isn't here. And was that this? And how can they be old, opinions or light or anything? My opinion is pollution, divine in its destruction. My opinion is the wild dog rose that lines the winding road up the mountain. My opinion is distressing and comes with a list of trigger warnings long enough to rid the world of all problems because it's the source of all problems and will never find it. My opinion is a piece of grass held flat in the gap between two thumbs. If I can get it.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Wait, one more try. My hands are shaking. Do I have an opinion? What's my opinion on? What's yours?
Thank you very much, Benjamin. Okay, so next we have Philip Spillane.
I have this like poem developing in the back of my mind for quite a while, probably a couple of years. I don't know, ever since I found out that part of the bow of the violin is called a frog. So anyway, it's based on like, if the bow of the violin had an imagination, what would it imagine? And there's a lot of poetry out there that's like this, but I tried to make it as abstract, as interesting as I can. So I hope you like it. Who could predict that just by my ruff, where my rough shoelace hairs of my tail, dock on my duck, naturally attached, lived two frogs, ebony and ivory. And during winters, with a light snow white hides the greens, my master clasps a chain billet strap around my strong fat chest, slides up on the seat and the saddle, forces his end down on my spine, and holds the reins around my withers as he kicks my hidden bruises to make me trot. Ebony and ivory would hold on, making sure they won't fall off. They'll hold as best they can to not expose themselves to the small chalky. He'll never know that his prize hides for vaulting frogs. Only in the spring, put fat bleeding butter buttercups, yellow grounds, and bluebells silently ring because there are no more fairies. Do the frogs reveal and make themselves obvious? Emily black tree wood frog, ivory pale white, my yin and yang friends. They whisper disappointments of life and elusive strange dreams from my tail, I could just about hear them around my head. They're funny, bizarre, and whimsical, because when they anecdote their dreams in detail, they remind me of mine. When I'm blind, but make sounds of a banshee singing, and it doesn't come from my giant jawed mouth, but from my tail, two Pacific strands of that, in fact. And it hurts. It feels like an electric current slides from the heart of those strings and runs into the soul and cracks. And then I'll wake up, snap. Isn't that strange? According to the frogs, in their dreams, they remember clinging to a specific tail strand as if that's the final part of me. They are blind, black, and hear no sounds. They're blotched out by the delicate finger claws gripping the rough shells they seem to bear. Deep in the unpleasant slumber, they'll feel like they're falling, then pull, slide back up. The giant clawed fingers brag their complete control. The frog is helpless because they're legless and they're lost. They also hear a pulse from the wrist, and that is supposed to be some sort of music. The bowl wand jails the final part of me and scrapes it off steel barbed wire stemming down a music box to make sonics into sonnets, and it really hurts. Meowing waves hit as the devil stands on a stage. There are no seasons here, no plants or flowers. The backdrop is the sky, and the fourth wall is the god, and the mock sun makes us obvious, amplified by my cries, my meowing shreds. And despite I ask, what does this violin bow dream? Is it a horse galloping in snow fields with two frogs hiding its tail called ebony and ivory? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Philip. Next we have Max Creedon.
Got an email one night and he said, can't do this for Meg, sorry if I hindered you. And I thought hinder was a great old verb, and I knocked a song under it where my guitar feels tuned. So I'll read it through and I'll sing it briefly. See what you did there. Hindrance. Hinder me, return me back to cinder. Render it, delete it, and all clear. Recalibrate and calmly redirect it. You do a U-turn as you turn me back to me. Diplomatically avoid all chance of ruining. A perfectly good plan, my new plan is defunct. Ensure that this folly is deactivated, prevent all the rectus acts of sabotage, all misguided hype and notions are debunked. Ensure that all follies are deactivated, all possible minefields are dusted out and swept. It's only for the common good after all. It's futile to rectify the fallout of the inept. It's only to protect those foolish actions. We're our worst enemies ourselves. So hinder me, my dearest, it's a kindness that you finally have saved me for myself. So briefly it goes, hinder me and turn me back to cinder. Render it, deleted and appear. Recalibrate and calmly redirect it. You do a U-turn as you turn me back to me. Diplomatically avoid all chance of ruining. A perfectly good plan, my new plan is defunct. Prevent all the reckless acts of sabotage, All misguided hope, hype, and notions are defunct. Ensure that all follies are deactivated, all possible minefields are dusted out and swept. It's only for the common good, after all, no futile to rectify the fallout of the inept. It is only to protect those foolish actions. We are our worst enemies ourselves. So hinder me, my dearest, it's a kindness that you finally have saved me from myself. Yes.
Thank you very much, Max. Next, we have Kieran McCartan.
Thanks, Lashman. Questions to wake up to. How hard must you work to conjure the words that you are comfortable in company? That you're balanced in your blasphemy? That you sob softly in scarcity? That you would settle for serenity? That, no matter what they say, you will gently re-enter the fray.
Hey guys, we have one more guest tonight. Just one thing, so last week it appears somebody left behind a copy of the Five Words collection that we think they purchased last week. If you think you might have lost it, just let myself know and we'll try and get that back to you. anyway, by the way, you should definitely check out, this came out last week, I believe, is that right? Yeah, so it came out, a collection of Five Word challenges from the last year, and yeah, you can find it here. I won't go to put that afterwards. How much is it, Paul?
€3.
€3, so that's, yeah, it's a steal. Alright, so lastly we have TJ Nolan.
Thank you. It's like totally like impromptu as well, so it's fun too. I'm TJ, I work here in Cork as a doctor, but class. Maybe like few weeks ago, quite difficult actually in Cork. What's cool is that back home, it's like I'm from Kerry originally, but like my parents were born and raised in Kerry as well. And for years, I thought like that mum is like totally uncool. It's like mum is like, mum's like in her 60s, she's a Kerry woman, she is like totally Catholic, big in the church. And I went home like one day and felt like my mum's old, like, record player, and maybe mum actually probably is really cooler than I thought she was. So like mum, it's a really old dusty record. Mum has like these like old records, like got the Beatles, the Ramones, and the Sidey and Sidey. And it's like one really quick thought. Like today, I mean, like if you, you know, like find a new artist or new album, those like, you know, like tracks like the 1 through 12. Like back in the, you know, the 80s, 90s, like there was like records, so there's side A and side B. So I went home like last weekend, and it's like I'm like post breakup, you know, like 5 year relationship, girl leaves you, it's super sad. And went home and felt like my mom's like, my mom from Kerry has Black Sabbath. And I found that exactly, so it's like, what? He goes, oh yeah, it's like the Sabbath, by the way, if you go back to the 80s, Sabbath had like, side A and side B. Side A is all like super like, you know, guys back in the, oh my god, even like Irish like rock songs, you know, like boys are back in town, Jailbreak kind of stuff. Side B is all super like depressive and sad. So like the, what's that song by the Irish band, it's it's called like the big Irish band, Jailbreak, Boys Back in Town. Thin Lizzy, thank you. Side B has songs like Devil Woman. So it goes, devil woman, don't you play your games on me. It's really cool how like there actually is a side A and a side B to most of these songs. But again, like, the point being that I had noted that moment A was cool and had like, you know, sadness and like, you know, Tim Lizzy and the Beatles. But there is actually a probably side B to like most songs as well. Probably it's kind of lost to like most songs to actually on iTunes or, you know, and, you know, buy songs and like inside and go with this, like there's always side B. So.
Thank you.